open up the House Committee on Human Services and Women's Wellness today, Friday, March 16th, and people are wearing green because it is St. Patty's Day. So we are going to move down the agenda, and we're going to start with first public hearing on Senate Bill 40. And this bill allows licensed hearing aid specialists to certify individuals as eligible to receive assistant communication devices or adaptive equipment through the Telecommunication Devices Access Program. Thank you very much. And we have who are signing up to speak, Lee Byers and Rick Willis and John Brenneman. So we have you all at once.
Are you going to run the computer, John?
No, it's not computer. Thank you, Madam Chair, members. For the record, I'm Lee Byer, Chairman of the Oregon Public Utility Commission. Senate Bill 40 is a bill that the governor introduced on our behalf, and as the chair just described the bill, it's a fairly simple bill. Essentially, it's to make it easier for people with hearing disabilities to qualify to obtain loaned equipment from the commission. We do this program, provide equipment to people with disabilities. It's a program that was established in the 1980s by the legislature, and it's been working rather well. What this does specifically is current law allows or requires that a person seeking to borrow equipment from us get a certification from an audiologist or a licensed physician. This makes it easier. It allows someone who is hearing impaired and dealing with a state licensed hearing aid dealer to use that certification to qualify for the license. It's really fairly simple, and we urge your support.
Great. Any questions of this witness?
Madam Chair, members of the committee, my name is John Brown, for the record, and I represent the Oregon Hearing Society. It's a small group of about 60 or 70 hearing aid specialists that are certified. This makes good sense. We support the bill heartily.
Great. Thank you. Do you have anything to say, sir?
Nothing to add.
Any questions? Yes.
No, Madam Chair, I just, looking at Senate Bill 41A, they're just linked in some ways. They're both.
Yes.
Can we talk about that one,
yes,
too? Because I do have some,
yes,
questions.
I will. Let's see. How do I? Does anybody tell me?
I have a question on 40.
Okay. Question on 40 first before we move.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Is this the first inclusion of the definition of hearing aid specialist in statute? Do you know?
Madam Chair, Rick Willis with the Public Utility Commission. Representative, no, it's not the first inclusion. The hearing aid specialist has been in there. What we're doing here is, currently, both hearing aid specialists and audiologists are in there.
Okay.
We're removing the audiologist part and leaving the hearing aid specialist as is.
Great, thank you.
Okay, I'll open up also a hearing, public hearing on Senate Bill 41A.
Once again, Madam Chair, for the record, I'm Lee Byer, Chairman of the Public Utility Commission. Senate Bill 41 is another attempt by the Commission to try and expand services, make it easier for people who need them to get them. Like Senate Bill 40, Senate Bill 41 is funded through what's called the Residential Service Protection Fund, which is funded by, if you look at your phone bill, there's a nickel on there a month, and that's where the money comes from. So it funds three programs. One of the major programs under that is what you may have heard referred to as lifeline assistance, and that's to make sure that people who are of limited income have access to a basic telephone service. It subsidizes that service. In 41, what we're trying to do is expand that service to people that are in what I generally refer to as assisted living facilities. Department of Human Resources use, I think they call it residential care facility. That's their nomenclature. The problem that we encountered with this is that people who are moving into those apartments in these facilities, generally if they're on Medicaid, I think that's right, Medicaid, federal law requires that their entire, all but $50, I think it is, of their allotment be given directly to the facility. Our law
currently requires us to look at the whole amount. So in essence, in many cases, they are financially ineligible, even though they only have $50 to spend a month. What we're doing in this law is our request is asking you to allow us just to look at the $50, which in most cases, in fact, I think in all cases, would allow us to assist them with their phone bill if they need it. The concern for us is these are facilities that are people are moving into what most of us would consider an apartment. The facilities generally say to the individuals, if you would like to have a telephone or a cable TV or whatever, or provide what furniture you need, you or your family provides that. If they're of limited income, they can't do that. And we believe that the phone is the basic contact with the outside world, with their family, their medical providers, what have you, and it makes sense to do this. As we've looked at the budget, the money that's available from this, we've reduced this fund a couple of times in the last couple of years, reduced the charge. There's adequate funds to cover this provision, and we think it's good public policy to do so.
Thank you. I want to point out, colleagues, that there is an amendment, and it's to the obviously the original amendment. And on page 1, line 22, it would delete the word annual. And on page 2, line 5, it would delete the word annual. So, Representative Maurer, did you have a question of that?
I did. And it's about that fund. And what is the total amount of money received annually?
Madam Chair, Representative Maurer, the total amount is approximately $7.9 million.
Okay. And my understanding is that this program, you said, was easy. Actually, you didn't say it in another conversation. You said it was easily absorbed under that a fund?
Madam Chair, Representative, yes.
Okay. And then one last follow-up. So what when you say easily absorbed, so what do we have left over? And because obviously this fund, I would imagine, is to be used for these types of programs. And how much do we now spend a year?
Madam Chair, Representative Maurer, currently we spend about that, a little bit more than that, because we are spending down the reserve balance. And in that reserve balance, and of course, we always keep a reserve balance. We try to keep it to about 6 months. We have sufficient funds for this service. It will cost next biennium about $190,000, following biennium approximately $250,000, $248,000. That represents about 1.8% of the total fund. So, as I mentioned to you before, that makes it fairly easily absorbed. As Chairman Beyer mentioned, that last biennium we reduced the surcharge from 13 cents to 8 cents. This biennium the Commission reduced it from 8 cents to 5 cents. So through some administrative belt tightening and some lower services, not that services that we provide are any less, but fewer people signing up for some of the services, we have sufficient ending balance to cover our needs and to pay for this fund.
Okay. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Madam Chair, if yes. I might add, I neglected to point out that this is one of those programs that's matched by the federal government, and I believe it's a 3-to-1 match.
On some parts, Madam Chair, members, there is some matching parts, so all this is not state funds. There are some matching federal funds in here as well.
Great. Thank you. Always glad to hear that. Any other questions? All right. Thank you, gentlemen.
Thank you very much.
I will close the... Oh, does anyone else wish to testify on either of these two bills? Seeing no one, I will close the public hearing on Senate Bill 40 and Senate Bill 41A. I will open up a work session on Senate Bill 40.
Madam Chair, I would move that Senate Bill 40 be moved to the House floor with a due pass recommendation.
Representative Gelser moves Senate Bill 40 to the House with a due pass recommendation. Any discussion? All right. Susan, would you call the roll, please?
Representative Cowan?
Aye.
Representative Gelser?
Aye.
Representative Gillian?
Aye.
Representative Kotek?
Aye.
Representative Maurer?
Aye.
Representative Olson?
Excused?
Chair
Tomei? Aye. Senate Bill 40, having gotten the constitutional majority, is passed and will be sent to the floor with a due pass recommendation. I think we can put this on consent calendar. Does anybody have a problem with that? Okay, good. Goes to the consent calendar, Susan. I open up a work session on Senate Bill 41A.
Madam Chair, I would move that Senate Bill 41A be moved to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Representative Gelser moves Senate Bill 41A to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Any discussion? All right, Susan, would you call the roll, please?
Representative
Gelser.
Aye.
Representative
Gillian.
Aye.
Representative Kosek.
Aye.
Representative Maurer.
Aye.
Representative Olson.
Excused.
Chair Tomei.
Aye. Senate Bill 41A, having received the constitutional majority, goes to the floor with the due pass recommendation. And again, I will put this on the consent calendar. All right. Now we will open up a public hearing on HJR 51. You know what? I don't have the write-up on it. Or maybe I do. Wait a minute. Here I do. Okay. Thank you. I've got it. HJR 51 recognizes contributions made to communities by persons with developmental disabilities. It recommends using savings in the governor's proposed budget to provide services for persons with developmental disabilities. Representative Gelser, did you want to be the first to speak?
Yes. Should I go down?
Yes.
Thank you, Madam Chair. For the record, my name is Sarah Gelser. I'm the state representative from House District 16, which covers Corvallis, Philomath, and two people who live in Linn County. Today, you have in front of you House Joint Resolution 51, which essentially is a statement of values about individuals with developmental disabilities. I'm very pleased to have a hearing on this month. As you may be aware, this is Developmental Disabilities Awareness Month, and I'm very pleased to share with you that the theme for this year's Developmental Disabilities Awareness Month is a home for every child, that children with disabilities belong living at home with their parents and families. And basically what this resolution does is outlines the contributions that individuals with developmental disabilities make to our communities and recognizes that full participation in community life does require support. We have many children, as you've heard in this committee previously, and adults who are waiting to receive services to support them in the community. There are two things that are currently happening, one that's proposed in the governor's budget and another that's happening by rule through the Department of Human Services, which could generate savings from programs that are currently serving individuals with developmental disabilities. And what this resolution talks about is keeping those dollars in the system. One of those is that the governor's proposed budget calls for the closure of Eastern Oregon Training Center, which is the last residential institution for people with developmental disabilities in the state of Oregon. You'll remember that we've already chosen to close the Fairview Training Center because as a state we have determined and we've led the way in determining that people with disabilities are entitled to freedom and living in communities rather than locked away in institutions. So I hope very much that we are successful in kind of closing this last vestige of the past. However, in the governor's proposed budget, the savings from that closure are counted as a cut. And though the money is spent to develop solutions for those who are currently living there to provide for them in the community, in this budget, the $1 million of savings that would be generated goes back into the budget rather than into serving the thousands of individuals with disabilities who are continuing to wait to receive services. And that would not roll forward into future bienniums to take resources that are currently used to serve people with disabilities, to serve the many needs that are waiting. The second change that's happening is the Department of Human Services is currently revising its rules around the admission of children and adults with developmental disabilities into nursing facilities. As a result of that, there are providers who are choosing looking to close some of their beds that are currently serving children with developmental disabilities, which will generate some savings in the system, which could be turned around to pay for some of the things that we talked about earlier here, House Bill 2406, House Bill 2407, which would support some of these children to grow up in their family home. Obviously, this is not a budget bill. It's a values bill for the legislature to make a statement about our need to commit to this population of people that is not politically very powerful. We don't have a lot of lobbyists wandering the hall to remind us of their needs, and I'm here today to remind you of these very critical needs and that we need to continue surfacing these needs to the top, and as we make our decisions, I hope that you'll join me and the co-sponsors of this bill in passing on the floor the statement that we need to keep the needs of this population in mind. They are very deserving, and I'm happy to answer any questions.
Thank you, Representative. Any questions of...
Yes. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Representative Kotek.
Representative Gelser, I'm very pleased to see this resolution. On the savings with regard to the rule changes, do you have an estimate on that?
I I do not have an estimate on that. It's about 12 beds. The cost is about $262 per child per day in those nursing facility beds right now. And what could happen is that because those are bed rates in those nursing facilities, my argument is that right now that's being used to pay for children, and that should remain with children with developmental disabilities as we are trying to develop these community-based supports to help families not be forced into making that decision.
Thank you.
Any further questions? Representative Mauer.
Yes, Madam Chair. I guess I do have a problem with this resolution because the closure of the Eastern Oregon Training Center has not been decided upon. I mean, it's in the budget, mm-hmm. but the Legislative Assembly has not agreed to that move. And so I almost look at this as counting your chickens before they're hatched. And so I have a problem with that part of the resolution. Just so you know.
Okay. Madam Chair, Representative Maurer, I would point out that because this isn't a budget bill, it's a resolution, that the language is that the state funds saved through the closure. Clearly, if the closure did not happen, there would be no funds that were saved. And the intent is, if that recommendation is followed through, I think that it would be a real disservice and a wrong for the state not to keep those dollars in the service of people with disabilities because they are currently going unserved. Partly because of the way we're spending our money.
A follow-up?
Yeah,
and I agree with that, but I agree with keeping those dollars, but I just think that by supporting this when we have not fully vetted the closure of the Eastern Oregon Training Center would be a de facto supporting that move when we haven't fully vetted that discussion.
I appreciate that. Thank you.
Representative Cowan.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you, Representative Gelser, for bringing this. I think I'd like to maybe focus the conversation in relationship to Representative Maurer's question and in your presentation just a bit. You speak frequently of the importance of children being with their families, where they belong. My experience in the county and as community provider is that we frequently find individuals who need services but are not necessarily don't necessarily have access to a supportive family living situation. So as I read this this resolution, it focuses on developing necessary community care for children and adults with developmental disabilities, mm-hmm. and I guess maybe I'd ask you to speak to that a little bit about the importance of the community infrastructure to provide adequate care, and the reason I think that's important, and in relationship to the discussion of the potential closure of Eastern Oregon Training Center, is because my whole concern about that discussion is that there will, in fact, be adequate alternative community care available to individuals who are currently being served at the training center.
Yes.
And I see that as a real critical need in our communities, that it's not necessarily in a home situation. So maybe you could broaden your presentation a little bit to cover that for me.
Yes, Madam Chair, Representative Cowan, thank you for asking that question. When we talk about community-based supports for people with developmental disabilities, that doesn't necessarily always mean their biological family or their home family. For adults with developmental disabilities and sometimes for children, that might be a foster care setting, that might be a group home setting, that might be a supported living type of setting. One of the challenges that we currently have in providing those resources is our real lack of investment in creating those appropriate supports. Many of you have had the opportunity to learn about the direct support providers who provide supports to individuals who aren't necessarily living with their families. They are living in supportive community-based environments. We are losing those staff at a tremendous rate because we have not increased their pay over several legislative sessions and several biennia, and we struggle to keep quality people that are there. You know, Representative Cowan, is a former county commissioner, how much our counties are struggling to provide developmental disability services. We mandate as a legislature that counties provide certain services, but we don't necessarily follow through with delivering them the resources and the funds that they need to provide these critical human service programs. And I would point out as an example, one of the lines in this bill is the 3,495 children with developmental disabilities in Oregon waiting to receive basic services. That comes from the presentation that the Department of Human Services gave us. That's the number of children who are in case management only for developmental disability services. We require our counties to provide those services, but we don't give them any funds to provide anything to these families. So they must case manage them without having any services to offer. So the idea of community-based supports is broader than the bills that I brought to you at the beginning of the session. It includes things like supports for families, supports for community-based supported living facilities, for the county programs that are trying to provide services to this population of people. The last thing that I'd like to hit on in your comments, I too am concerned about ensuring that should the closure of Fairview Training Center follow through, that there are high quality and appropriate supportive living arrangements and supports made for the individuals, the 40 individuals that continue to live there. And I know that we have heard many, many things, and I know that there's a larger conversation to be had on that issue about economic development. I know that there's some concerns from labor. The concern that I bring to you is the concern of the 40 individuals who are living there, who we have not heard from. I have visited that place. I have spent time at Eastern Oregon Training Center. One of the individuals there said to me, and I will never forget this, if I'm really good and I follow all the rules, I might get to leave and live in my own place. But this is a question that's about the rights of these individual men to live in an appropriate place. It's also an economic question, and I think a moral question for our legislature when we have limited funds, whether or not it is appropriate for us to continue spending more money than it costs to provide appropriate services to people in order to maintain a vestige of the past when we have thousands of people that are waiting if we were able to more effectively spend those dollars.
Thank you, Representative. Any further questions? Thank you very much.
Thank you.
We have a couple of other people who would like to testify. Mary Wright. I think it's Joanne. Is it Furman?
Oh, she'll get back.
Good morning. Thanks. Good morning.
I just wanted to get that.
Just identify yourself.
Thank you. Okay, I'm Mary Wright, and I am a case manager with Marion County Developmental Disabilities, and I've been a case manager for 12 years. I have approximately 110 children on my caseload, and some can't see, some can't walk, some can't talk, and some can't hear. There are children that have to be moved. Every move that's made in their life is done by a parent or someone close to them. They all deserve the very best that life can offer. The families come from all income levels, very, very low and very, very high. The stress that they have is incredible, no matter how much money they make. In many families, one parent leaves because they can't handle it. They just are gone, and some are never seen before. Parents and siblings need respite. We don't have funds to just give them the hours that they need. They need in-home supports so that they can take a shower. Some families that I work with don't have any opportunity to sit down and eat. I have parents that haven't sat in a chair for years because they're on the go day and night. There are over 200 families on the family support wait list, and the flyer that's here says 254, but I think since August it's nearing 300. The family, family that I'm currently working with has two boys with disabilities. The dad is up day and night taking care of one of them. He recently lost his job because he was gone so much. When he was working, he received phone calls saying, you have to come right now. He goes 5 to 7 times a month to Portland for doctor appointments, and then there are school issues that he has to deal with, so he's called upon all the time. He asked for help from us. We had no funding to give him. He has 20 hours a month that he can have someone come in, and he uses that in the morning for time that he can sit down and eat, and this person gets the kids ready to go on the school bus. I did refer him to another program, and I thought that program would take care of his needs with some in-home supports and some medical equipment. His points weren't high enough, so the funding wasn't approved for him. Respite would make major, major changes in his life and having in-home support. The family support program could make a major difference in this child's life and many other children as well. Any additional funds that could be allocated to the family support program would be appreciated. Thank you very much.
Hi. Good morning, Madam Chair, members of the committee. My name is Joanne Furman, and I'm the Associate Director of Partnerships in Community Living, and I've been the Associate Director for the 23 years of our existence. PCL provides homes and jobs for over 100 people with developmental disabilities in Polk and Marion County. Most of the individuals we support are former residents of Oregon's institutions, such as Fairview Training Center, and we've seen their lives improve measurably since they've left, since they have increased control and choice over their lives. I'm also representing the Oregon Developmental Disabilities Coalition. The DD Coalition is comprised of self-advocates, providers, provider associations, advocates, residential and employment providers, statewide entities, and others who are collectively committed to improving services and supports to Oregonians with developmental disabilities. Our mission is to plan and implement collective actions to enhance and improve the quality of services and supports to persons with developmental disabilities in Oregon. We are very pleased to see the plans to close Eastern Oregon Training Center and move those last institutionalized Oregonians with developmental disabilities into our communities. Certainly, many people with similar needs are already being served by PCL, our organization, and other organizations around the state. We're here today to support HRJ 51 and tell you how essential it is that these resources be kept within our DD community. Right now, over 15% of our jobs go unfilled. Our employees must pass drug tests, be literate in English, hold driver's license, be able to administer medications, and follow critical behavior support and other procedures to provide supports to individuals with complex needs. We cannot get enough applicants to take these jobs at the wages and benefits the state allows us to pay. And unlike other care systems, nursing homes, we cannot pass on unmet costs to our private customers because we don't have any. The state is our only customer. When the long-range plan to close Fairview was developed by a broad consortium of stakeholders, we negotiated that the savings would remain in the DD community. Some of those savings were added to the community rates to improve services to help reduce employee turnover that at the time exceeded over 100% in parts of the state. The rates we received as part of the settlement allowed us to pay wages that were about 50% above the state minimum wage. Immediately upon increasing our wages and benefits, we saw our turnover drop by 30 or 40%. And we were able to keep all of our jobs filled and avoid overtime. It was an increase that allowed us to expand and provide services to those people who were leaving Fairview. But that was over 7 years ago. Today, our rates allow us to pay wages that are barely exceeding minimum wage. Average wages are only about 14% above minimum wage. Our benefit package has been so slashed. Most of us don't offer dental, disability life, health insurance plans require substantial employee contributions, and basically our employees can only cover themselves. Their families aren't covered. We desperately need an influx of money to continue to meet Oregon's obligation to care for this population. Indeed, our own organization and others we are aware of has sent letters to SPD stating that we cannot expand and we cannot take new people without fiscal relief. I also serve on SPD's Rate Restructuring Committee for DD Services. This committee advises SPD the implementation of a federal grant that is allowing Oregon to completely restructure the way it pays for DD comprehensive services. As we look at the service models that are responsive to individuals' needs, it's clear that without additional funding, this $2.5 million process, which was all federal funds, will be a glorious exercise in futility. In fact, one of the major comments of the recent audit by CMS was that the process must succeed for Oregon to continue to meet federal guidelines. In other words, without major overhaul, Oregon could jeopardize 60% of the money that it spends for DD services. By the next biennium, when the savings from Eastern Oregon closure will be fully realized, SPD will have a clear picture of the costs necessary to sustain quality services and the service expectation that providers can be held accountable to. But it will take additional funds to implement these recommendations. The savings resulting from Eastern Oregon closure will help meet this need. Thank you.
Thank you. Any questions of either of these? Yes, Representative Kotek.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you for your testimony. I have a question about the long-range plan to close Fairview. When you said the savings were negotiated to remain in the DD community, can you tell us a little bit more about that? Was the expectation just for the folks coming out of Fairview, or was the sense that we need to keep those dollars within the system? I'm just wondering if you were involved in that and have any more.
I wasn't involved in all the implementation of that as a service provider. I participated in committees for that planning. I think the idea was that we were going to create a system in the community that would be able to sustain itself, provide excellent services to people leaving Fairview, and then be able to respond to the needs. So there was ability as people's needs changed to hopefully access additional funding. To help that happen. I'm not sure how it addressed waitlist issues, I think.
Could I add something?
Mm-hmm. Yes, please.
Every 6 months, we send applications in for Fairview Community Grant, and we fixed bathrooms with that resource. We've done all kinds of things for families that they wouldn't have been able to do. There have been access put into backyards through that program so that children who are in wheelchairs can go out and join the neighbor kids and really get involved in community. And the Fairview Grant has provided that. I have one family who's had $5,000 put into their bathroom. They're going to apply again. And there are some families that have gotten two rounds of money with that money. So it is coming back into the community on a regular basis.
Thank you.
Representative Gelser.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you for bringing up the issue of the Fairview Housing Trust. And I wanted to just add on to that piece of what that when money goes to remodel a bathroom, it's not just changing tile. I sat on the trust reading board once, and one of the cases that jumped out to me the most was a woman in her 80s that was still needing to lift and climb into the bathtub to bathe her 60-year-old son that she had been caring for 60 years. So those dollars really are being used to make very critical changes that impact the health and the safety of these individuals and their families as well.
Well, and the family members are aging, and they aren't as strong as they used to be, and they can't lift them forever, and they're growing. Every day the disabled person is getting bigger and bigger, so it's very intense.
Thank you very much. Representative Gillian.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you for your testimony. Given both of your experience in this, I'm wondering, as we look at a joint resolution and the advantages that it has, shining a light on an issue like this, not necessarily, you know, substantively changing anything, but nonetheless bringing awareness and a momentum, would you have any objection if we were to change the wording so that we sort of got around this presumption that Eastern Oregon is going to be closed? Because I don't think it's a fait accompli I used that term for you, by the way.
that was good.
Thank you. But would you have any objection to that? We'd say, you know, any funds from this type of closure or that have been dedicated thus far should be diverted to. Is that something you'd want to comment on?
I think we just need people to be aware that there are so many children that are going without what they need. And however you word it, just give them more money so that we can do our jobs and make life better for all these families.
Mm-hmm. Could
you identify yourself?
Oh, I'm sorry. I'm Joanne Furman. I was going to ask her your question. I guess I would say that anything that could help make sure, if it does close, that the resources stay in our community are important. But personally, I would just like to add that I think the closure of Eastern Oregon is an important step for Oregon to take in making sure that people with developmental disabilities are served appropriately in communities and that their rights are protected.
Thank you so much. Thank you for coming today. We appreciate your testimony. Is there anyone else who is here specifically to speak about this bill? We also have another one coming up. I guess that's it. So I've got a couple of other bills to hear. But is there anyone else who wishes to speak on this HJR 51? Seeing no one, I will close the public hearing on HJR 51. And Representative Schaffler is here to speak on House Bills 3136, 3137, 3138, and 3139. I'm going to open up the public hearing for that, and then I will close it and open up a public hearing on 2372. So I am opening up a public hearing on House Bill 3136, 3137, 3138, and 3139.
Hi.
Representative Schaffler, thank you for coming today.
Thank you, Madam Chair and committee members. I'm Mike Schaffler, State Representative, Happy Valley, District 48, Happy Valley, Outer Southeast Portland. And I just would like to thank the good chair again for House Bill 2700. I just, that was a wonderful piece of legislation, and I did go home and hold my cherubic, angelic daughter's face in my hands and spread the joy, and same with my wife. Okay, in 2005, we, Operation Project Independence, we funded a website that just provides information about where to go, get what, essentially. And I just, for full disclosure, I'm not here selling any one product. That's not what I'm doing. This is a system. It works, and I just want folks to take a look at it. But this would essentially just expand that into the areas of domestic violence, children and families, and mental health. It's working well. This is a great website, the Network of Care, and I think you've all got handouts on it. Go check it out and take a look at it. And I think one of the challenges we face here in government is connecting people that need services with where those services are and what is available. And we all know there's incredible need out there, and we frequently talk about the numbers. For example, yesterday I had some nice folks talking about domestic violence, and they were giving me the statistics of the folks that come in that they serve, and we all know that the need is greater than that. And people just don't know sometimes where to go and what to turn to. And anything I can do to help connect those folks with those much-needed services. In that area, I have solutions that are inhumane, illegal, and unconstitutional, but I won't go into that. But just connecting people with the services they need is, I think, part of our job. And this is an attempt to do that. And I just wanted to go come and ask you to take a good hard look at it. Are there any questions? I try to stay away from this committee because healthcare is overwhelming, and I'm far more at ease building America and making sure people are getting good pay and a family wage. But I really want to thank you for all the work you do here.
Thank you, Representative. And the whole committee is hardworking and has great work. Thank you so much for coming today. Don't stay right there. I'll open up the questions. Representative Collin.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you, Representative Schaffler, for coming in and for your work on supporting these. I have looked at the Network of Care, and it's outstanding. It's doing wonderful things. I'm just wondering if you've got I just don't know. Are there any cost estimates on
I have here for the, this is just, Jacqueline Zimmer here will be.
Oh, somebody else is going to explain that
to explain everything. But
yes. Well, not to mean, I didn't mean.
The domestic violence to acquire is $140,000 and maintains $126,000. And she'll be providing you, I believe, with all this information when you do actually open the bills up for hearing.
Okay, I'm sorry, I didn't mean to.
That's quite right. The good chair was kind enough to let me slip in here because I have to go do the people's work.
I know you do. And Representative Cowan, we do have several people scheduled to speak, but I'm going to let him finish and then go do his thing, and then we're going to get back to 2372.
Thank you, Madam Chair, but it was such fun to
put
me on the spot.
Madam Chair, just one question. Since you referred to 2700 at the beginning of your testimony.
Yes, sir.
In front of all of us here, did you cry when you went home?
No, I didn't. Okay, but I do sometimes. And I would like to add one more thing, Madam Chair. You're exactly right. A lot of women have been working on real hard for a long time on this. But I just got to say, there's some guys that have been working on this, too. So I got to plug my guys.
You're absolutely right. Thank you.
No, my pleasure, Madam Chair.
Let's get through any other quick questions.
Yeah, I had one, Madam Chair.
All right, Representative Gilliam. Oh,
thank
watch
you,
out.
Madam Chair. Representative, thank you so much for being here. And I've seen this demonstrated. It's fantastic. It's web-based. I just wanted to ask you, do you see it continuing in a kind of a DOS-based format, or do you see a kind of an overall integrated approach as far as the software goes?
Well, actually, Madam Chair, I typed and printed all my papers in college in the early 80s on DOS. So actually, I am familiar with that.
Oh, my God.
But the, and I believe...
I withdraw my question.
And I believe, while you brought that up, Legislative Council, I think, is still on DOS, and they need to be upgraded to the integrated whatever it is he was talking about. is that sufficient, Representative?
You continue to amaze me.
All right.
Something about following your own petard.
Exactly.
I'm real good with the shovel, though.
Thank you so
my
much
pleasure.
For coming.
Thank you very much.
Okay, I'm going to be closing the public hearing on 3136, 3137, 3138, 3139, and we will be reopening it. But right now, we're going to open up the work session on House Bill 2372. Colleagues, we have amendment after amendment on amendment. So I wanted to walk us through this. We've had a long pregnancy and very long labor, and I would like to have this baby born today. So, Andy's going to work us through these amendments.
Thank you, Chair. So what I'm going to do for the...
That's sort of an engrossed one, or do you
I
not?
Do. The members on your desk, members, you should have a version of the bill. It's highlighted in yellow, various parts. Looks kind of like this. So that will help you. I can kind of walk through. There is just a one amendment that's before the committee today. It's the -18 amendment, which is a combined amendment of a variety of other amendments that have been considered by the committee. So one important disclaimer as I do this, members of the committee, what I marked up here is in no means an official engrossing. It's just a tool. You know, if at any point you would be voting on amendments, you're voting on the amendments, not what I prepared. Just so you know, it's just a tool because I can't vouch for its accuracy. But what it does is summarize the changes, the highlighted areas, and I'll just walk through those very quickly so for the benefit of the committee. And Susan, were you able to give the amendments? Amendments are available in the back as well for members of the audience.
Susan, could you read me one of these copies? Because that's what I want, this.
Right here. Very good, Chair. All right, so on the first page, line 9, there was an and. It regards undue hardship. The and would be changed to an or under the proposed amendments. On line 12, the word notify would be replaced with the phrase provide reasonable notice to. So that would read the employee shall provide reasonable notice to the employer. On the bottom of the page, the last two lines would be deleted, 29 and 30. Moving to the second page, The first line to one would be deleted, and then there's some renumbering as a consequence all the way down to almost all the way to almost to section two. On line 20 of page two, there's a word A. Instead of reading "this section applies only to the employer whose employee is expressing milk for a child," it would change that to "her child." Right after on line, right after line 27, there would be a new section that deals with the school district changes that are being proposed by the amendment. A piece of that, another piece is later about school districts, comes later. It's inserted after line, or in, at line 43.
Okay, and I'm going to stop you there because after line 27, where it says insert school district provision piece, if you look on your amendments, you can see that part. This was the part that the work group got together. That was Representative Gelser, Representative Potek, right? Weren't you on that? And Representative Gilliam. And this was, they had met with people from the School Boards Association and came out with this. And this amendment you've had in your possession for a couple of weeks. And it's a pretty long one. Goes to page what in here?
Well, it's actually, Chair, it's inserted. It goes basically until the end of the dash 18 amendments, which should be almost
page 8, right?
Page 8.
Right.
And there's new text.
Up to where, what is line 9 now on that page 8, which is section 4. So, again, I just want to let you know that you did see those amendments. You've had plenty of time to look at those. All right, now go on to...
Chair, on that note, just to clarify for the committee, the amendments that are in the dash 18, all of these were previous amendments but four at the back, all the way to the back. On page 8, you'll see the dark text, which is section 4. So just to clarify, everything else was in prior amendments. The only thing that's additional in this dash 18 amendment is a section 4, and I'll cover that in just a moment. Moving down on page 2, line 34, right after line 34, there would be a new section inserted, section 2, which is not, again, new. It was a prior amendment. It has to do with BOLI, and a $1,000 intentionally provision is the basic language. And so if you want to refer to the actual changes, they're in the amendment. I just kind of noted where they would go in the statute. Then at section 3, line 43, there would be another piece of the school district provision would go there. It kind of came in at two different places. And then the last, as I said, this is new to the dash 18 amendment, is the section 4 regarding a BOLI advisory committee.
And this section 4, came up because of conversations with people who were feeling like there would be certain industries where it would be very difficult to require breastfeeding in the workplace. So our intent is, and I just want this on the record, our intent in this is to have ad hoc committees called upon as needed with equal members of the workforce and equal members of employees meeting with BOLI, and it says that there will be staff assisting them, but it will be equal members that for that industry that's calling this issue into question. Yes,
Madam Chair, just a clarification. And so that would include, you know, we talked about ag,
right,
and fire and public,
right,
safety,
right,
but also categories like small business, the ones that
absolutely
technically would be a category.
Right. Okay. It could be any number of categories.
Okay, thank you.
And so that's when we started enumerating them, we realized this could be endless, and there will be ones that we'll never think of that will come up. So we wanted to have something that would work on those that come up in the future. Representative Kosar.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I just want to praise you for the Section 4 amendments, because when we had some discussions about particular industries, I was starting to feel very uncomfortable about that, because we were somehow making some implied assumptions about women in those industries that I thought were inappropriate.
Right.
This is going to be, if there's an industry-driven concern, it's not about a particular industry, and I think this is a good route to go, so I just want to thank you.
Good, you're welcome. Thank you.
Chair, could I clarify one more thing before it gets too late in the discussion? You'll see, members of the committee in the audience, throughout the combined amendment, you'll see various bold language. For example, on page 2, line 18, you'll see that there's a cannot, which has been changed to may not. These were not substantive provisions or changes. They were stylistic changes that the attorneys drafted. So there was nothing new in those, just so people aren't concerned that there was something substantively that had changed.
Okay. Thank you. So I know this is a lot to chew on. I'm going to ask you to chew on it right now. See if you think you can vote on this today, and I hope that you will be. Any question about that? Representative Gilliam.
When you say question, is this the time to express our views on the bill?
Sure.
Because we're going to go...
I prefer with questions first. If there's anything, that clarification that you need on what we've done so far, especially in the amendments that have changed a lot of the bill.
Then I'll hold.
Okay. I'll get back to you. Any questions or wish for clarification? All right, Representative Gilliam.
Oh, there you go. This is a good bill, and it represents a lot of hard work that I have at least witnessed. I can't say that I did a lot of the heavy lifting, but I was here. And if you don't understand how important breastfeeding is to children and mothers, then you weren't listening. If you don't understand that many mothers had difficulty in the workplace, you weren't listening. I have wanted, on the last part of this bill, to continue to create an atmosphere of cooperation and go less with the stick, even though this bill is a stick in many ways, and more of a carrot. And I am particularly concerned that we're going to go ahead with the potential, and I want to be very careful with my wording here, but with the potential for excessive fines in an area that we have not administered yet, and a law we haven't. That is why I thought we had covered this in a work group. I don't blame the work group. I think it was... We did what we could, and everybody's schedule sort of... We only met once, and then we've had lots of other meetings. So I'm not complaining about that. I'm saying I'm concerned that in my recollection, we moved from the idea of $1,000 one time, or I was willing to do $5,000 one time per year per case, so that we wouldn't have these excessive fines. I must also say that I was encouraged by the commissioner coming to my office, and I don't level my criticism at the relationship between small business and the Department of Labor and our current commissioner. But I believe that there is difficulty there, and sensitivity needs to be recognized, particularly between small business and the potential for labor, not because the commissioner wants it this way, but because it can happen, that we would have excessive fines for this. I mean, it could be... The way it's, and maybe my limitation is not enough, but I believe it's far too open. It does not, this is not a deal breaker for me, but I believe it's very important that we not give that kind of power to any agency to do that, particularly when we don't have a track record on this. So I just wanted to be real clear that I'm concerned about that portion, and I continue to be.
I can appreciate that, Representative Gilliam. Would it be helpful to you to have Commissioner Gardner come up to talk about that?
I don't think it would, because he's taken the time to come to my office, and I understand his intent and his openness, and this is not meant at all to be an adversarial thing with him. It is a larger view of mine that we don't want to give any agency this kind of open-ended possibility for those kinds of fines. And he has spoken to it, and I appreciate that. But I still think we ought to tighten this part up.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and I appreciate the representative's comments. And I do think the intent of the Bureau is to use discretion in how they do that. Probably wouldn't hurt to have it one more time on the record, because it could make people feel at least more comfortable if something does go awry. I don't know if the commissioner would be one. Just to say again what the intent is around that penalty piece. I don't know if that would help. To have it on the record.
To have Representative or Commissioner Gardner come up, or to ask state that it's certainly not our intent to put anybody out of business. Mm-hmm. That is why we want this ad hoc committee. If there is a problem, this committee will get together, an ad hoc committee, and settle that issue so that hopefully there will never be a reason for anyone to be fined. So
I'm just making, if you think that would be helpful, I...
Actually, I agree. Madam Chair, I agree with Representative Patek. I think it would be a great opportunity for the commissioner to come up, and we could,
Great. Thank you.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee. For the record, my name is Dan Gardner, Commissioner of the Bureau of Labor and Industries. And let me just outline how I view BOLI's role, if you'll allow me the acronym, in this issue. First and foremost, our goal is education through the Technical Assistance Unit for Employers. So when legislation like this passes, it's our obligation to go out in the community and, you know, with businesses to educate them to what the new law is and to work with them, particularly under this one section for particular affected industries, to make sure that they recognize there is a difference between a construction site and an office building, how you can, you know, come about rules for this particular issue. When it comes to fines on the wage and hour side, we don't make very huge fines on, and there is a track record on meal and rest periods. We don't fine ever on the first time. We rarely ever, if ever, fine on the second time. Our goal is to get the employer in compliance with the law. My philosophy personally is that if you fine large fines to a business, they have to, on their bottom line, do something different, which usually could include laying off an employee. I don't want them to lay off an employee. I'd like them to come in compliance with the law. And oftentimes that's just a matter of education to what the law is. Even though we do, through the Technical Assistance Unit, educate employers, oftentimes an employer wasn't aware. They're too busy in their workaday lives trying to make a business run and make it grow. And so what we would do initially when we have a complaint come in is go to the employer, explain what the law is. And yes, we do say that, you know, we have the ability to fine, because that's usually the final thing that gets them into compliance with the law. And we'll work with them to make sure that happens. It is never my intent to have huge fines on anything within wage and hour law.
Thank you, Commissioner. Any questions or any further clarification that would be helpful?
Not sure I do. Commissioner Gardner, the way the discussion that we'd had earlier in the week and everything, the way you see, and I guess it refers to the question, the concern that Representative Gilliam has, you see the ad hoc committee, and that's described here in Section 4 right now, this amendment, as going through that process first before probably going to the extreme of a fine?
Madam Chair, Representative Olson, absolutely. First of all, because of the, I don't see the particular language, my understanding is that it's willful intent. So by setting that bar so high, it would mean that we would have to let them know they are in violation for even the clock for the ability to fine would come in. And again, it wouldn't be my goal to fine them. It'd be my goal to educate them to what the law is and make sure they get into compliance and work with them to do so.
Okay. Thank you.
You're welcome. Any further questions? Representative Gilliam.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you for coming up. It was not my intention to have you do that, but it's a tough, tough committee. Would you have any objections? You've heard this idea before, and I'm wondering if we could go back to it. Would you have any objections that whatever we decide on the fines, if the fines were assigned to a fund at DHS, the one I have had in mind all along is the friendly, somebody help me with the thing, the friendly breastfeeding program. Did I mispronounce that?
No, I just don't know what to say.
But that's, if you all know what I mean, I'm sorry I don't have it in front of me, but there's a program, and we had a brochure on it within DHS of assigning those, the proceeds from those fines to that fund. And the reason I ask you that is because I think it would go a long way to, again, preserving this atmosphere of not us and them, but a cooperative atmosphere of employer-employee working together and understanding the difficulties of this, and at least making the funds available to something that we can all sort of agree on and continues the goodwill.
Well, Madam Chair, Representative Gilliam, certainly where a fine goes is a decision of the legislature. There are other fines we assess that do go to other things. But let me clarify where, if anyone were ever fined under this, the dollars would go in the first place is they go to the general fund. The agency does not get to keep those funds. It's a general principle of the legislature for many, many decades that you wouldn't want forgive me for the example, but the police officer writing the ticket to fund the department. So it currently would go to the general fund. Where you would dedicate it to is a decision of the legislature. I certainly support the fact that we may have unlicensed farm labor and farm forest camps, for instance. Those funds go over to housing department for farm worker housing fund. I wherever you'd like them to go, be fine with me.
Okay, follow up. I found it. So you have no problem with us if we assigned it to, and I found it here, the Breastfeeding Mother Friendly Employer Project under the Department of Human Services, if that's what we chose to do.
Madam Chair, Representative Gilliam, no, I would not. I object to wherever you would like those funds to go.
Thank you, Commissioner. Any further questions of the Commission? Thank you. Representative Gilliam, I'm not sure how to do what you have suggested. And what I would like to ask of you is, I would like to get this bill out today. I'd like to get it to the floor. What I would like you to do, because it needs to go to the Senate from here, could you research what it is you would like to have happen and suggest at the Senate committee that they perhaps dedicate those funds to that area?
I would be willing to do that, but let me ask you a question.
Of course.
If we want to, are you on a strict timeline today? Do we have time to, what I'm asking is, do we have time for a 5-minute recess? And I think it's called a conceptual amendment. And if I propose a conceptual amendment, would you entertain that?
I think it would be very difficult because you're dealing with funds, and then it would probably have to go, I would imagine, to Ways and Means. It is not just a simple thing that we can change a word in here.
Then I defer to your wisdom, and I would be happy to do the research and work with the other body. What did you call it?
The Senate.
The Senate.
Yeah, it is. That's the NAT. That's what they told me. And I would be happy to help facilitate that.
Okay.
Thank you so much, Representative Gilliam. Any other questions or concerns? Okay, we're in work session. I would entertain...
I'm sorry. We're moving into work session.
Aren't we in work session?
Where did you open?
I opened a work session.
Oh. Okay.
We've been in work session.
Representative Maurer.
Yes. So I wanted to make several comments about this.
Please.
This bill has been beat to death. And and I appreciate the indulgence of, and I want to highlight Diane Garrett and her hard work, but also the committee chair for her patience in this. One comment is about the reasonable notice, and there was some at-length discussion. I just want this to be on the record. That there's a reference back to how this procedure goes, back to ORS 183.745, which means that the employer has a due process piece that they have in their adjudication of this whole complaint, and there is an issue here of 20 days from the date of the service of notice, which means that if the woman has not provided adequate notice and we go to this due process time and she's already breastfeeding, that it's too late, that she has waited too long to recognize her rights. And so I just think it is absolutely imperative in the education piece that we talk about early notification, and earlier the better. And the other thing is that we have beat this to death for one reason, I think, and it came up early in the testimony, that this is model legislation for the country. And so it was very, in my mind, it's very important that we get it right so that other states, you know, we can take this and tout this and say, yes, Oregon is out in front, and that we have thought about a lot of issues and addressed a lot of issues. Hopefully in a positive way, there's a balance between employee and employer. And so I just want to put that on the record and thank Diane Garrett for her hard work. And I know we have the other side, that other body, to deal with. And I'm sure they'll have their own opinion. But I believe that this is a good bill and that the breastfeeding issue is a larger issue than just workplace. And that we need to bring this into the whole debate of healthcare. This is about prevention. This is about evidence-based medicine and how we can keep people healthy in their lives, and that there possibly in the future may be incentives for women who choose to breastfeed, and so that there is a financial incentive to do this. Anyway, I close. Thank you.
Thank you so much, Representative Mallard. Representative Cowan.
Madam Chair, I hope that we've captured all of Representative Mallard's comments right now. They were excellent, and I know that this is an effort that's taken a lot of thought and energy from all of the members of this committee, some of whom have really needed to work through a process. And I just really want to express my gratitude for all the energy you put into it and have made it the product that it is. And I thought your comments were right on target. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Cowan. Any further questions, comments? Concerns? Thank you all. Okay. Representative. Well, you can.
Okay.
Do this.
Well, Madam Chair, I'd move that Amendments 18 be added to House Bill 2372.
Representative Olson moves the Amendment 18-18 to House Bill 2372. Any questions, concerns? All in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? That passes.
Okay, and to further this, Madam Chair, I would move then House Bill 2372 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Representative Olson moves House Bill 2372 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Any concern, questions? Susan, please call the roll.
Representative Cowan?
Aye.
Representative Gilser?
Aye.
Representative Gilliam?
Aye.
Representative Kotek?
Aye.
Representative Maurer?
Aye.
Representative Olson?
Aye.
Chair Tomei?
Aye. House Bill 2372 is amended, having received the required majority, passes.
Well done, Chair. Is that okay in this committee?
Yes.
I would assume this is not a consent.
No.
No.
She said yes.
I think we'll all do better. Okay. Representative Maurer, would you be willing to be the co-carrier with Representative Berger?
Representative Berger, I will co-carry. Yes, Madam Chair.
Great. Thank you. Thank you all so much. Let's do that again. Okay. I'm closing the work session on House Bill 2372. Thank you so much, committee. You worked so hard on this. I really appreciate it. Okay, now we're opening up the public hearing on House Bill 3136, House Bill 3137, House Bill 3138, and House Bill 3139. And Jacqueline Zimmer. Good to see you again, Ms. Zimmer.
Good morning, Madam Chair, members of the committee. For the record, my name is Jacqueline Zimmer. I'm with Trilogy Integrated Resources, and I earned 650 frequent flyer miles coming here today. Thank you very much. Appreciate the opportunity to come back to Oregon. Shall I just go ahead and proceed, Madam Chair?
Yes.
Okay, thank you. Members of the committee, it's nice to see you and nice to appear before you today. And I want to add my congratulations to the effort yesterday. And I remember working on that in 1991. So, well done. Same issue. Well, anyway, I appreciate the opportunity today. I'm here to talk to you about an expansion of an existing program that you have in Oregon called the Network of Care. Statewide, you have a site for seniors and people with disabilities, and in two counties, you have a mental health site. You have it in Lincoln and Mid-Columbia County. And just a little background for you. My interest in this particular site came as a result of watching staff cuts year after year in the aging and disability system, and being the co-chair of the Human Services Coalition, as well as Representative Kotek, seeing the whole human services spectrum, seeing the fragmentation, seeing people's inability to locate services. And a little story about that, I was standing outside of a 7-Eleven. I was getting into my car, and a person came up to me and said, I need to find some sort of drug and alcohol treatment program. I can't find it in the phone book. And it took me, who has a human services background, about 20 minutes to go through the blue pages and find the service this person was looking for. And so that, coupled with the idea of all the staffing that we were losing, watching legislators become case managers, watching all of us be case managers and try to restore services, led me to the idea that we really needed a website for seniors and people with disabilities, or the whole community, to find services. At the same time, the state happened upon a company called Trilogy, who had a Network of Care website, and they saw it and said, this is a fantastic solution to the issue of fragmentation, which is exactly what the president of Trilogy Integrated Resources had in mind when he created the site. Bruce Bronson was the chair of Human Services Ways and Means in the California Assembly for 10 years. So he watched what you're watching every day, and that is people needing services and not knowing that they exist, and such and so forth. And he and his partner created this site at the request of Governor Gray Davis. It was a $2.5 million site to build, but Gray Davis's instructions were to make it replicable so that it could be used statewide. And so the information is localized to a region, but the site itself can be picked up and moved anywhere. Local service information can be loaded in local links, and then people have access to the site wherever they are. So it's been very successful here in Oregon. I'm impressed with the numbers of people that are using the site, both in the urban and rural areas. It's very high, and that's anything that helps people find resources at their convenience is a wonderful tool, and I applaud any agency that's working on developing something like this or has something like this in the works. So I just wanted to show you some things real quickly, and then I know there are some people who want to speak. And Madam Chair, I'm not sure, what time does this committee end?
Well, no later than 10:30.
Okay, thank you. I want to just note one thing. It's very last session I represented the County Veteran Services Officers. Actually, I did that for a couple of sessions and noted the significant problems with veterans accessing services in the state. And the County Veteran Services Officers were the main tool to help people find services. We have just launched a veterans site on our Ohio site statewide so that the veterans of today who are used to going to the internet for finding services and who are confounded and confused and frustrated with the VA will actually have a tool for them to use of their own through Network of Care. So I wanted to let you know about that, and that's on our mental health site, and we'll be doing a 4-state pilot nationwide on that pretty soon here. But this is the Lincoln County site, and I know that most of you have seen the site at some level, and so I'm not going to go through it kind of piece by piece, but I just kind of want you to be aware that the platform is similar for all of our sites. Every day we call from about 2,000 periodicals, so there's news for you every day that's specific to your particular concern. All of our sites have translation capacity. The mental health site is the one that's just a little bit different. Mental health is such an important topic that we no longer translate the entire site into multiple languages because we want to make sure that people get accurate information when it comes to their mental health conditions. To that end, what we have done is we have hand translated the 12 most common mental health conditions into 7 languages. And if you click on this site, you will get I'm sure you can't hear it, but this is a Spanish explanation of the mental health condition along with information about where to go to get services. We have also have the mental health conditions hand translated into Spanish. So that's a new addition from the last time that I was here, just to make you aware of that. The site's also available in text only, so if you're out in your districts with your PDAs and you see somebody who needs some services, you can look it right up on your cell phone using that text only feature. I wanted to also just show you that we've also added in the mental health community Mary Ellen Copeland's WRAP program, which is designed to help you construct a plan of action for yourself when you begin to feel symptoms of your mental health condition coming on. That's also available in audio. But basically, it's a system that's set up so that when you're feeling well, you create a plan for yourself. Here's this particular feeling I get when I know things are starting to kind of unravel. Here's what I do. Here's who I call. Here's who I don't want involved. We're having a little trouble making this come up this morning. Here's who I don't want involved in my care. I don't want to go to this facility. I do want to go to that facility. Those kind of things, so that we can help reduce the severity of crisis, hopefully, when you feel as though you're not as in control as you'd like to be. So I just wanted to call that to your attention. And also just to let you know, there are no barriers anywhere to using this website except when you're getting into your own personal folder. It has your health information in there. That's the only time that you sign on. But like our other services in the folder, you can share this information with whomever you like by giving them a login and a password.
Yes, Representative.
Excuse me, but is there a way to track, this page, for example, a way to track that people are actually using it?
Madam Chair,
Representative. I know accessing the page to just look at it is one thing compared to accessing it and using the information and some behavior or taking a behavior pattern or change of behavior to rectify a problem. And so I'm wondering, how has that been done or could you do that?
Madam Chair, Representative Maurer, one of the beauties of this particular type of a tool is that we can certainly track how many unique visitors there are to the site, how many repeat visitors there are to the site. We can tell you how much time they're spending on average on the site. We can tell you if they're from the United States. By the way, there's a significant percentage of people that use this site that aren't from the United States. We don't break down what people actually have in their folder or how much time they're spending in their personal folder. Your own personal health issue, there's a lot of stigma attached with certain conditions, and we just don't go there. We don't actually have the tool to do that, but we don't mine for that. We've also found that if you put a survey up on the website, again, there's no barriers to anyone using this. You just go onto the site, and if you put a survey up, oftentimes people won't take advantage of a website. They don't want to stop and do the survey. So, you know, if you wanted to do something like that, we could certainly try to find a way to do it, but it's not done right now. So at any rate, so that's just kind of two new things that we've added since I was here earlier this year, and I wanted to make you aware of that. And I know you all are aware of this. If you're a member in the community and you come to the site, there is a live demonstration feature on this site that takes you through both audio and watch it, and you can watch someone moving through the site so that it helps you maximize your skills and your use of the site. So I wanted you to be aware of that. It's designed to help people find information very quickly, 3 to 5 clicks at the maximum, anything that you find on the site, you can store in your own personal folder anywhere on the site. People are trying to keep track of their health information all in one place. They can certainly do that here. But I wanted you to also be aware, as with a lot of other human services sites, there's no advertising anywhere on this particular site. There's no company behind us. It's just us doing this particular work. So the information that we have here is quite credible. at any rate, I wanted you to be aware that you do have a mental health site here in the state. And while if you don't live in Lincoln or Mid-Columbia County, the service directory probably wouldn't help you as much. You're welcome to use this site for any of the other features that are available when you get calls.
Jacqueline, I just want you to know I've got five other people scheduled
right.
to speak on this.
Just very quickly, this is your site for seniors and people with disabilities here in Oregon. In case you need to use that, if you want to find a licensed care facility anywhere in the state, you can. You can also see that there's a children and families site here, and I would encourage you to go through that as well. We have a developmental disability site, and we also have a domestic violence site that we've started in Ohio right now. So they're all similar platforms, similar options, but different information on each one of them. So one of the nice things about having a system like this statewide is that it addresses the issue of fragmentation, just of finding information that's all in contained in one kind of website. So I know that a lot of you have seen the site. I'm just here to just show you what's new and answer any questions that you might have.
Thank you, Ms. Zimmer.
You're welcome.
Will you be talking? We got the pricing. I'm not sure that it's important that you go through this, but I maybe just call attention for people that the pricing list is here.
And, Madam Chair, we price the mental health and the children and families and domestic violence sites only in this particular instance. So just so that you're aware of that. A couple of points to make about that is that the maintenance fees for the sites that Network of Care operates never go up. So when you're dealing with roll-up costs in the future, you can at least put one thing in the bank, and that's that the cost of the site doesn't go up. It may go down over time, and it has twice. But also, anytime anyone adds a site to our state, then the cost of the maintenance for the pre-existing sites also goes down. They also honor that reduction in their cost, because when you're working with a system where they already know some of your data, some of your players and whatnot, it's a lot easier to work on something. So we pass those savings on to everybody.
Thank you so much. Any
You're
questions?
Very welcome.
Madam Chair, just really quick. This could really get into a long discussion, but and this could be something we need to talk one-on-one on. But I'm just curious, House Bill 3138 that deals with the children and family information for that part of the website,
mm-hmm.
the information that is collected, that's placed in that for the public to access, there's a whole bunch of different views on how to discipline kids. I'm just using this as an example.
Mm-hmm.
You'll have one clinical psychologist for children say corporate punishment is the correct way to go. You'll have another one say, no, that's not the way you want to go. You want to use timeouts or something similar to that. How do you determine what's the right balance or the direction that you're going through Trillium in this website right now for that information?
Madam Chair, Representative Olson, that's a really good question. And there are a couple of answers for that, and one of them is that we list our contributors to our library and our data and information, and primarily a lot of those come from HealthWise Knowledge Base, which is one of the most reputable providers of information in the nation. They provided information to the federal government and to insurance companies for years, and we were the first public company to actually have access to that. But we list every article has a list of and citations of who wrote the bill when it was last reviewed, or the piece of information when it was last reviewed. But in the end, Representative Olson, the information that goes up on your website, it's not our call. It's the state's call. Essentially, it's the experts in your state that oversee those particular services. We have 320 sites around the country, and very rarely do we hear from somebody that there's something up there that they object to. So our track record is pretty good for that. But it's something that you might want to look up yourself and consider. But here's our sources for them right here. So, and this library is updated 4 times a year. So, and there's about 50,000 pages worth of material in the site itself. So,
thank you.
Mm-hmm. Thank
Good
you, question. Ms. Zimmer.
Thank you very much,
and we may be hearing from you again.
You may.
All right.
Thank you.
We have on the list Sherry Lentner and Joe Wykowski. And Patty Verzani. And Michael Park, I think. Can we bring up another seat? Are you Sherry? Why don't you go ahead and introduce yourself? Thank
Good
you.
Morning, Madam Chair, members of the committee. I am Sherry Littner, and I am staff to the Marion County Children and Families Commission. And I'm here today to ask you to support the bill, House Bill 3138. And I just wanted to talk very briefly. I come more from the perspective of the resource and referral data that's maintained on the site. And there's many issues in Marion County that this would resolve. There are many entities that maintain their own resource and referral data right now. It is very, very staff intensive and costly. The information that they maintain is very quickly outdated. So I think one of the most compelling reasons is that it would reduce recurring costs that are accumulated throughout the state. In Marion County, we've tried to resolve this issue by working with an existing statewide database that maintains health and human services information. We were able to partner with the administrators of the database and offer it to our providers and agencies at no cost. Our staff maintains that information, and I can tell you that it is very time-consuming to maintain it. It's cumbersome to use for the providers, and it does require a logon and a password. And a lot of times what happens is we will work with one individual at an agency, NDHS, Mid-Willamette Valley Community Action Agencies. These are all good examples of large agencies that the information doesn't get spread throughout the agency. I think the biggest issue with the current system we're using is it is not accessible to the general public. So an individual that is having a family crisis, it's very, very difficult for them to access information. I can tell you anecdotally that our office probably maybe 50% of the phone calls that come in are family members in some kind of situation, and they are often frustrated and discouraged because they have difficulty navigating the service delivery system. I think that's really the main thing I wanted to talk about. I think that the tools that are available on the website for agencies and service providers are far more comprehensive and sophisticated than what they would be able to design for themselves, in particular some of the smaller agencies that don't have the IT staff to do the design or the staff to maintain it, and also that it would be a 24-hour accessibility to citizens.
Thank you very much. Any questions of this witness? Thank you.
Thanks. Thank you.
I think we have a request for someone else to testify prior to us that needs to leave, if that's okay.
Oh, sure, that's fine.
Thank you.
Gina Nickel.
Madam Chair, committee members, for the record, my name is Gina Nickel. I'm the Association of Community Mental Health Programs Director, and I appreciate your indulgence. I have to get to it. I'm one person covering everything, and I have to get to another meeting. And what I want to say is just very, very simply, the association has purchased the Network of Care website. We also work with Lincoln County and Mid-Columbia, and we are working to get a site in every county. This is phenomenal. And as Representative Maurer had asked some questions about how do you track usage, right now it's anecdotal, but the usage that we're getting in Lincoln County and Mid-Columbia is really, really good. And so what's happening is the money that we're spending on crisis, we're spending a lot less money on crisis, and we're just beginning to track that because people are managing some of their own symptoms and asking questions that they normally would call their therapists, and they're feeling more connected to the agencies that serve them. So I just want to put a plug into this network of care. It has really been great for us, and we're new in the stages of it, but Lincoln County and Mid-Columbia have a lot more experience with it.
Ms. Nickel.
That's okay.
So you say it's new, so how long have you had this?
We, the association, have just had it for about 2.5 months. Okay. Lincoln County and Mid-Columbia have had it since last summer.
Oh, really?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And can you tell me how much it cost you?
Well, for the association, it has been free. We will have to pay maintenance efforts, but what we're trying to do is get it spread throughout. So I can bring back the numbers that it costs Lincoln County and Mid-Columbia.
Okay. And maybe we have that in here.
Of course.
I think we do.
Absolutely.
All right.
But I've looked across the nation for a website like this, and things are quite spendy, and I've been very happy at the cost of this particular program.
Thank you. Representative Gelsinger.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'm not sure if you're the right person to ask this question of. Clearly, it's a great website that is providing a lot of assistance. But I'm wondering, I'm trying to think of another instance in which a vendor has been identified in statute for the long term. If there were to be a problem with the vendor, would you have, or would the state have, the necessary flexibility to switch to another vendor or terminate a contract with the vendor without coming back to the legislature for a change in statute?
Madam Chair, Representative Gelter, I'm probably not the right one to ask, but I do want to say that this is actually a pre-existing program, and I think that it's very important not to be piecemealed out. SBD has this system, and I think we've got to be very careful not to get something over here and something over here that doesn't interconnect with each other. And so as far as canceling this and going to something else, I think we'd have to check into that.
Representative Kotek, and then Representative Mauer.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you for being here. One of the things that I think would help if we were to move something like this, for example, for mental health, is trying to get a grasp of the cost savings for the individual mental health providers, the counties, whatever, in the system throughout the state. I know that's a little difficult to quantify, and the idea would not be to take money, for example, cut their budgets because we're saving them money somewhere else, but we're struggling to fund mental health, and if there's any way to free up dollars that they're already getting for other things. I mean, not everybody needs an IT manager to manage a website, for example. So, is, you know, those savings, you know, we can invest more in the system if we're investing in this side. I'm just wondering if you can help us quantify that somehow.
Madam Chair, Representative Kotek, I would be glad to talk to the managers in Lincoln County and Mid-Columbia and get some of that information for you and bring it back.
Thank you.
Representative Mauer.
Madam Chair, this is really not a question, but it's actually a comment back to Representative Gelser's concerns. And I think it's a very appropriate concern. If we look at Department of Education and their issue with their testing under TESA, which I'm not going to, I don't know what that acronym is, but where they're having a problem with a specific vendor, and the vendor not liking going out on the open market to look for, you know, to compete. And I think, though, in DHS, that they are moving from in-house IT to going to off-the-shelf systems because they do not have the dollars and expertise to maintain programs in-house. And so I think it's a very interesting question that I don't think that government has not really been able to answer, because we, government, do a very poor job of running our own IT, and outside vendors are market-driven and do a much better job. And so I don't know where to fall out on this, but it's extremely interesting, and we have to talk about commonality of platforms and commonality of languages so that you can transfer information. And if, for example, and I'm not going to, I don't want this to be taken the wrong way, but if Trilogy were to go away, go out of business, or somebody retires, then it doesn't just fall apart. So I think this is a concern that's larger than our little committee can deal with, but I think that in the larger spectrum of healthcare reform, that we have to start addressing these issues because they are going to become more and more common across across the discussion of health care reform. And I'm sorry, one last comment. This is about health care reform. This is about opening up, looking at different avenues of meeting the patient in ways that we have not dealt with them before, or I shouldn't say patient, but clients or whatever you want to call them. And so that this is an important discussion, and I would like to think that we could talk about it in a larger context than just Trilogy.
Thank you, Representative Maurer. Anything else before we move on? Thank you so much for coming, Ms. Nickel.
Thank you for allowing me to butt in.
You bet.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, my name is Joe Wykowski. I'm the Executive Director of Community Vision Incorporated. We're a nonprofit organization that's provided services to individuals with developmental disabilities for the last 18 years in the Portland metropolitan area. And I know you're familiar with developmental disabilities. There's been some testimony this morning concerning developmental disabilities in the state of Oregon and the needs for families and support. I'm here today to talk specifically about Disability Compass, a website started in 2005 to provide services, access to services and supports relating to developmental disabilities. Community Vision has recently entered into a joint partnership with Disability Compass to provide supervision, infrastructure, and fundraising expertise to enhance the success of Disability Compass. So strengthening our efforts to bring this website throughout Oregon to families and individuals. Our organization supports the Compass website because it provides comprehensive information to families and individuals who experience a disability in a manner unlike other websites. By logging on to Disability Compass, families are able to access specific information in their towns and neighborhoods related to respite care, repair of adaptive equipment, medical information, and many other community-based resources that families need for support. And I say throughout Oregon because we're very cognizant of the fact that we're just not talking about the Portland metropolitan area, that we want to provide service to families throughout Oregon, whether it's rural or in the city. The uniqueness of Compass website allows families to also add resources to the database that they have found most helpful. This unique nonprofit partnership is providing resources in a cost-efficient manner through the use of foundation grants, partnership fees, and private support. Today, Compass consists of 25 partners whose unique perspectives add to the strength and usefulness of the site. And just so you know, we currently have a budget of just over about $100,000 to run this site yearly. And again, we've done this with private foundation grants and partnership fees and private donations. The Compass website continues to expand its outreach both by adding partners to the website and most importantly by adding resources to the site. In an environment of scarce financial resources, Compass continues to provide a free service to families and individuals, improving their access to critical services and supports. And we're here today because we're really in support of funding for INR sites. We think it's very critical. We've been able to do this as a grassroots organization providing services to families. And we also wanted to highlight our efforts the last 2.5 years to provide this service because we have one point of entry where families can come on the website, families who have a child with a developmental disability or individuals with a disability, and find these critical resources. And the big difference in our site compared to, say, other sites is we have a very specific way of searching. Families can put in a zip code. They can find those resources in their town, 5 miles away, 10 miles away, 25 miles away, and find the physical therapist they need or find those respite care providers. And many of our partners, just so you know, are nonprofit agencies. You heard Ms. Furman testify this morning. Polk Community Living is one of the partners. Many of the DD support brokerages are partners of this project. Some of the county, state agencies, and we continue to grow the site. So this is a work in progress. that has been available for 2.5 years, and we continue to redevelop the site. And again, I just want to mention that we're housing it with a joint partnership within Community Vision, because we're trying to do this in the most cost-efficient manner possible. So we provide office space, financial fundraising, infrastructure for the project, internet access to our host and such. So I'm going to stop there and see if you have questions, or I'll defer to some of the Compass staff.
Okay, why don't we move on to the other speakers, and then we'll come back with
great
questions.
Thank you.
Good morning. My name is Patty Verzani, and I am a staff member of Disability Compass, as well as a parent of a child with a developmental disability. And, you know, I'd like to kind of talk a little bit about just, you know, how I went about kind of finding my way as a parent. When my child was diagnosed at the age of 3 with autism, we didn't know where to go. We were in a world that we had never really heard about. So, you know, we kind of went upon our way, being directed to the local school district as well as a local hospital for therapy, but didn't have any real sense of direction on where to go. And at that point, at that young of an age, it wasn't impressed upon us at that point to contact a county caseworker. So that was delayed by several years. And we did find our way eventually with the help of other parents and educating ourselves through workshops and conferences, anything we could do to kind of just, you know, find out our way through this disability. Then in the summer of 2005, I was introduced to Disability Compass, and I found out about it through a listserv and the fact that they were needing individuals to update, add, improve the site. So I came on board, and it was very exciting to me that there was this concept of having one central place to hold all this information. Because as I had found, you know, you talk to one person and they have one idea, you talk to someone else and they have another idea. But what if you were to put all this information together in one place and then anybody could find it? You know, what a great idea. And I knew that at that point, you know, I had really only scratched the surface of the information that I knew that was out there for my family. And I knew that also that Compass had to succeed for the benefit of the other families whose children were just newly diagnosed, as I had been previously. Then in July of 2006, this was after Compass had received some funds through a foundation, they were able to hire staff members, and I was one of those individuals as data manager. And I believe that Compass has the ability to reach out to families and caregivers or individuals with disabilities throughout the state of Oregon. We've created an avenue for up-to-date information. Right now, currently all of the resources are being updated annually, and it is our goal that those would be updated every 6 months. So that is in progress as we speak. We also find that this is a great resource for caseworkers. They can use this to build a database for their clients. They could also use it to hand information to their clients or just directly to give an email address, because we know how overloaded our caseworkers are right now. So this is just a source for them to go to for information that is current, because we all know that everybody keeps lots of pieces of paper, but, you know, those are outdated before they even get looked at probably the second time around. So, you know, I'm here just to say that, you know, Disability Compass isn't the only source of information, but we're trying to be a great source of information for the state of Oregon and make sure that we access the people that need it the most and with information that is current.
Thank you so much. And we're going to the next speaker, and then we'll allow questions.
Michael has asked that if you'd like me to, I can read his testimony, or it is in the packets that we have provided.
Could you just give us a brief rundown of his testimony? I can see it right here.
We
can
Sure. Michael obviously is a physically challenged resident of Oregon, an employee of Disability Compass, which, as you know, is a nonprofit sponsored by Disability Navigators, Inc. and Community Vision. Disability Compass is a referral source for people with disabilities and their families. They can search for disability-related resources, such as parent-run support groups. I think that's really important to know about Compass. We're not just about organizations. We're also about small groups that have been put together by parents themselves, statewide agencies and national organizations. It's also beneficial to professionals like caseworkers, as well as nonprofit organizations and physicians, and is a place where you can search, store, and share resources. Michael is writing in opposition of House Bill H3139, as the text of the bill only references one source for information and services for persons with disabilities. This would potentially limit state agency access to other databases like Disability Compass that provide information on a wide range of products and support organizations.
Thank you so much, and thank you, Michael. Thank you for appearing today. Any questions of any of these folks? All right. Thank you so much.
Thank you very much.
Is there anyone else here who wishes to speak on any of these questions?
Madam Chair, I have a follow-up for Jacqueline, if I may.
Sure. Jacqueline, could you come up again?
I'm curious how I'm a big fan of web-based, you know, the idea of someone can go on and find their own information, but we also know that access by phone is really important. And nationally as well as in Oregon, we have the 211 initiative, so people can call up, find resources. Now, there's some issues with that. You know, those calls are only as good as what's on the other end. And I could see some relationship with 211 taking advantage of Network for Care, for example, to do referrals over the phone. Can you speak to how you've been working with 211s, either in Oregon or in other places? Because, you know, I do think they're both valuable resources for folks.
Certainly. For the record, Jacqueline Zimmer. Madam Chair, Representative Kotek, the issue of 211, if you were to contact 211, this is my understanding, and we have we do partner with 211 almost everywhere we go. And oftentimes they're concerned that we're coming to town, but in the end they end up using our service directory, which is fine. It's super. 211, if you call them, will give you information very quickly about services that they're aware of, and they will also, I think, maintain a list of agencies that you can do volunteer work for. I think that's another one of their functions. They're often funded by United Way, and they sometimes have a difficult time maintaining funding. But we often work with 211, again, because the information they have in their service directory is useful to everybody, and the information that is in ours, which is much more detailed, is helpful to them. So we are just working with Utah right now. They've asked us to submit a proposal to work with their 211 and their statewide food bank. So it's just anywhere we go, we see 211, and we're happy to know that oftentimes their service workers have our website up as their first line of response when they're trying to serve people in the community. Again, it's much more detailed information. So,
follow up. Thank you, Madam Chair, and I appreciate that because I do think it's important, and I'm really glad to hear they're working together. And we had the issue up in Multnomah County. Someone called 211. There was an article in the paper. They didn't get the right referral to, I think it was a suicide hotline or something. So, you know, 211 only works when we actually have the resources on the other end. So it's another plug for a product like Network for Care or something related to provide that infrastructure for those phone referrals. Because whether, you know, phone referrals are still going to be important for folks, but, you know, we have to make sure they have the information when somebody calls. So
right. And Madam Chair, and I, you know, I must say for the record, wherever people can get help, it's fantastic. I mean, anywhere people reach out and that they've heard of something, it's fantastic. And quite honestly, it's delightful to be named by name in this particular bill. That's not what we're really necessarily about here. I mean, we're about the healthcare issue and helping people access it. And the internet is the number one place where people do go for information. What you want them to do is be able to go somewhere with credible information. That's kind of the service that we provide. But at any rate, 211 has a purpose as well. We also have a call center capacity, so a lot of times when people have our website, they also have our call center, and that becomes their 211 as well, so they can track calls and track the clients that come in. So it's very important a lot of times for funding sources for people to be able to track that kind of information.
Mm-hmm. Representative Cowan.
Thank you. Thank you, Madam Chair. I think probably my earlier question just sort of highlighted how much I need to learn about this whole process. And so I'm not sure if my question is actually for Jacqueline or are we going to be hearing from the Department of Human Services about the question? I guess I just have a great deal of discomfort with a bill that has an amount of blank in it. And I've looked through the price sheets that we have here, and it doesn't answer my question. We're talking about a web-based or a website purchase for three different programs, and how or when do we get a handle on what that would cost the state, whether it be a specific program, whether we're going to specify a program or not.
And Representative Callan, an excellent question, and this was just a public hearing so that we could get some information about these programs. We're not sure where we're going to be going with this.
Okay, that question was more to understand the process, sure, but to make sure there wasn't something I needed to get from Jacqueline while she was here.
So right.
Thank you.
Yes.
Madam Chair?
Thank you.
Yes. Thank you, Madam Chair. Just for the committee's information, I had a hand in helping draft these and getting them to LC and working with Representative Schaffler. So in terms of the actual company being named, I don't think that was the intent. This is one of those things that came out of LC. So that was, we were not requested to put that particular name in the bill. So I just want to make that clear. I also think the blanks were, again, it was, we wanted to get the thing started. So I think some of the clarification, if we wanted to move one or all of the bills, I think we'd want to give some sense of the funding level when it comes to Ways and Means Subcommittee so we're not confused. But again, I think this was a... We talked and we're like, let's get something going, and this is what came out of LC, so just to clarify for everyone.
Thank you for your indulgence. That helps me get my brain around what we're talking about.
Absolutely.
Here.
Absolutely. Thank you for asking the question. Any further questions, comments, concerns? All right. Thank you, Ms. Zimmer, and for all of you to testify today, and we will close the public hearing on House Bills 3136, 3137, 3138, and 3139. Wow, 5 minutes. Any questions or concerns for the good of the order? If not, have a great weekend, and I will see you on Monday at 8:30 promptly. And I hope promptly. And I close the committee meeting on House Human Services and Women's.